Vancouver has seen dozens of shootings in recent weeks. Understandably, people are concerned and want to do something about this problem. In this era of addiction to instant results, we are told the answer is to crack down on this gang war with more police, more surveillance, longer sentences. But many argue this approach is ineffective and won't get to the root of the issue. People like Dr. Richard Mathias say a more productive and humane response would be to legalize and regulate drugs. Dr. Richard Mathias is a professor of public health and a member of the Health Officer Council of BC. Dr. Mathias joins us from his home in Vancouver to tell us more about what the legalization of drugs would look like. Thanks for joining us.
Well, it's my great pleasure. Thank you for allowing me to appear.
What role do you think illegal drugs has played in these recent gang-related shootings here in Vancouver?
Well, I think there can be little doubt that what's happening is that the profits to be made from the sales of illegal drugs in Vancouver and in British Columbia, as in fact in the world in general, these profits are very high. Therefore, the people that are trying to achieve these profits and to maintain them must do so without the benefit of courts or any other kind of mediation. So what they've chosen to do is murder.
And what impact would legalizing drugs have on this gang activity and organized crime?
We've had a little bit of experience with this, at least by analogy, when we look at prohibition, which was present in many provinces in Canada and certainly present in the United States. Because the shootings and the general gang violence are there to protect profits, one of the ways, at least, that seems to make sense to me and to many others is to remove those profits from the gangs, from the illicit part of this. And what we're recommending as a Health Officers Council is that we look at a public health framework for drug regulation. This would involve basically legalizing the drugs, but legalizing them under a very strict set of regulations so that their growth, their distribution, and their use is controlled in a manner that minimizes the harms to the public while recognizing the benefits that individuals feel they get from these drugs.
And how would you describe or characterize our current system of dealing with a wide range of drugs?
Well, this is a classic for-profit system. There are basically no regulations. There are certainly laws. But the prime motive for the distribution of these drugs is for profit. And the fact that it's done by a criminal element means that any control that might be exerted over them is minimal, if any at all.
So profit is what drives the current drug situation. What criteria do you think drug policy should be based upon?
Well, we think, first of all, it's we're asking for it to be evidence-based, and we're asking for it to be not one-size-fits-all, because as many of our listeners will understand and know perhaps better than many, that different drugs do different things. That's why people use them. They have different benefits that people gain from them, but also they have different harms. The toxicity and the behavioral results of drug use vary dramatically according to which drugs are being used. Therefore, the system of regulation that the health officers of British Columbia are espousing is a system of regulation that recognizes that different drugs are different and regulations need to be different depending on what the potential benefits and harms of each drug are.
So I know in this whole talk about changing our current drug policy, there's different terms that are put out there. I'm just wondering if you can tell us what the difference between decriminalization, regulation, and legalization are.
Sure. Basically, decriminalization takes place when the drugs are still illegal. And what it says to people is that use them, we won't penalize you for it, at least not in terms of criminal law, although we may still fine you for using them as long as it suits us. The problem with decriminalization is that the law is still on the books, and so if the police and the attorney general wish to enforce those laws, they can do so very easily. They can do so depending upon the individual. The Senator Nolan had a committee that looked really in great depth at marijuana, and their conclusion was is decriminalization is probably the worst of all activities that we could undertake. And it's worse because what it does is it really brings the justice system into further disrepute. As bad as it is now, it was their opinion that decriminalization would make it worse because it gives the police, in many ways, the power to decide who they're going to charge and who they're not going to charge, and there's no way that individuals can defend themselves from that. Now, what we're proposing is first of all, it's legalization. A regulatory system will not work if criminal law continues to be applied. So the criminal law has to go. But what replaces it is another set of law. It's basically regulatory law, such as we have in place for restaurants. When you go into a restaurant, you expect the food to have been grown under good conditions. You expect it to have been transported in a way that it's not contaminated, and you expect it to be served in a way that the food will be satisfying and will not make you sick. That's the kind of regulations that we're very used to dealing with in public health, and those are the general types of regulations that we would want to be applied to drugs.
And would that be something like the current system that regulates the drugs of tobacco and alcohol?
It would be. It certainly, we've had a lot of experience, particularly with tobacco, and we've shown that regulation and good public policy, it's not all regulation. A lot of it is health promotion. It's us talking to people and saying, look, this is dangerous. It's bad for your health. Can we help you quit? Now, we expect that kind of an approach would continue. So that's the health promotion approach. But underlying the health promotion approach is that we need to protect people who don't consent to be put at risk. And what I mean by that is things like secondhand smoke. The people who are exposed to that can have health risks because of it without having sort of any control over that. And so the regulatory part of drug law would also make sure that people were not exposed to risk because drugs were being used in other kinds of settings. Another example of that, of course, is in alcohol, is that we regulate where it's sold, we regulate when it's sold, we regulate the age group that it's sold to. Now, we still have problems with it, but where we bring the law into focus are things like drunk driving, where the driver who's drunk puts other people at risk. And that's so the laws are graded depending on the amount of risk that other people are exposed to.
But what about the profit motive that exists in this free market system? There's tobacco companies and alcohol companies that make money off of people consuming these things. How do you deal with the influence of that under a regulatory framework?
We feel that the for-profit motive is something to be avoided, whether it's legal or illegal. We know particularly from tobacco companies, that they were egregious in their attempts to maintain their profits and in their denial that there would be any harms being caused by tobacco. So we do not want to go that route with these drugs. However, there will be companies, for-profit companies involved in this, but their scope will be narrowed down by regulation so that they have to stay within fairly strict guidelines and fairly strict laws about what they can do, particularly in terms of advertising, in trying to gain new markets, in terms of what they are allowed to tell people their drugs will do. That has to be evidence-based. They can't just go and advertise freely for these sorts of drugs, even as the pharmaceutical industry can't do that in Canada now. They have to stay within sort of an evidence-based sort of issue. Some of the people who currently are, for example, who are growing, particularly marijuana, would now grow under a license. They would be paying taxes. They would be sending their product into a legal distribution system, which would also be regulated and taxed. And then there would be a distribution system for retail sale. So yes, there would be certainly the private system would be in there, but it would have to be tightly controlled.
So you're not arguing that the state itself should get into the business of producing the drugs or other sorts of nonprofit entities?
Well, we've already had that specter when in terms of medicinal marijuana, where the federal government said, well, we're going to grow it and distribute it, and they basically were going to grow it in mines in Flin Flon, if my memory serves me right. And one of the things that the BC Compassion Clubs will tell you is that the product that was being produced by the feds was really dreadful quality, and the people wouldn't use it. So that, no, I don't think that the state should be in the business of doing what basically in growth and distribution, what they should be in the business of is regulating it, making sure that it's that it meets safety standards, and making sure that people are not being harmed by this, at least not being harmed by it without consenting to being exposed to potential harms.
So maybe it would help if we got specific.
Sure.
Say drugs were legal and I wanted to access some cocaine, how would that work?
Okay. Cocaine, we'll go back. Take one step further. If you wanted coca leaves, which basically are a natural product or an herbal product, they're not concentrated. So if you wanted to make coca tea, then these leaves would be, I would see them at least as being available in the kinds of places where you might buy a beverage now, or in a natural food store. Because cocaine has been manufactured, and it's much more concentrated and more potent, then it would be sold by somebody who, when you bought it, the seller could tell you what the effects were likely to be and what the adverse effects were likely to be. And I would suspect that would be somebody who was a pharmacist or somebody like a pharmacist, the way we do with prescription drugs now. So they would be sold by somebody who could make sure that you understood what it was you were buying and what effects may occur from that purchase.
And what other elements would exist as part of this regulated system? For example, education or treatment for addiction?
Well, of course, a key part of this is that the state would, or at least the regulatory system that we're proposing, is that the more dangerous a drug is and the more dangerous the mode of use is, the greater would be the regulation and control. So as we mentioned with coca leaves, that would have relatively little regulation. Cocaine that you were going to snort would have much more regulation. And cocaine that was going to be used by injection would be available in a very limited fashion, if at all. But it would certainly be available only in a single-use syringe with a known quantity, with a known purity, so that if you chose to use that, then you could use it as safely as possible, knowing what the concentration was and without it being adulterated or contaminated, so that the chances that you would get a skin infection or many of the other complications that occur from injection drugs would be minimized. So we would have that whole range of things available, but the control of them would vary with the potential harms.
And I guess part of your point is a lot of the harms that come from current drug use have to do with the criminalization.
Oh, absolutely. In particular, heroin has been used for thousands of years. And the mode of taking it, when it's oral, there are some side effects, but it's quite safe. Smoking it, the overdoses are very unusual. What we're seeing in this country is because it's illegal, because it's being imported, then what they want it to be in as small a volume as possible, in as high a concentration as possible, so that it's easier to smuggle. And consequently, we have injectable heroin and such things. And it's the adulterated drug, it's the unsterilized drug, it's the use of sharing needles, and these are the things which cause the great harm with a lot of injection drug use, particularly with heroin. And we know from the Naomi trial and from Insight that we can do a lot to ameliorate, reduce those harms, if not reduce and getting rid of them entirely. So yeah, it's the way that it's being done, not the drug itself. Heroin is a safe drug. We use opiates all the time in the medical professions, in the healthcare professions, to alleviate pain and suffering. People are doing that with heroin for their own reasons, but for similar issues. They're doing it because they perceive and they get a benefit from it. We need to make sure that is done as safely as possible.
And what about the argument that by making something legal, you're saying as a society that it's okay? Will legalization not encourage people to become addicted to substances that are harmful to themselves and those around them?
Oh, well, we've got two great examples of that. The first one of which is tobacco. My generation, and I'm considerably older than you are, when I went to medical school, we used to smoke in lectures. And I mentioned that to my medical class, the second-year medical class at UBC today, and they laughed because nobody would even dream of doing that. So societies can change their perspective. Societies can change how they view these things, and tobacco is a great example of that. Alcohol is one where we could argue that we've been less successful, and part of that is because alcohol reduces inhibition. So the kinds of things you put on yourself to say, I'm not going to tolerate certain behaviors, alcohol in some settings will remove that. Now, that's its desired effect, but that's also something which we have a great difficulty in harming. A great difficulty in controlling, because it can be quite harmful. So we would have to look at what these issues were and then use that evidence base for having different regulations for different drugs. Public health has got a long, long history. We don't want people injured unnecessarily unless they absolutely understand the conditions. We allow people to hang glide, even though if you do it wrong, it could be an extremely dangerous thing to do. A few years ago, ecstasy was quite common in raves, and we had young people dying. Well, figured that one out is that was due to the fact they weren't drinking enough water. Made sure that water was present at raves, even though the ecstasy was still illegal, we were able to cut down the number of deaths dramatically by just a good, well-thought-out public health approach. So we have been able to persuade most, but not all, but most adolescents and most adults that smoking is not a good thing. We can do the same thing with drugs, and we can do so with a lot more evidence so that we'll have a little bit of, we'll be believable. We will try to use, rather than just saying all drugs are bad, which people look at us, and when somebody says that, people look at you as if you're crazy, and in fact, I think you are crazy if you say that. They want the evidence. We give it to them. They will respond to that.
I think partially it's that people often don't see alcohol as a drug, nor do they see prescription drugs as drugs, and so it's the illegality that people are referring to when they say things like drugs are bad.
Okay. Well, you have to remember that the illegality is totally irrational. One of the reasons that opium was made illegal in the 1920s was they came out here from Ottawa, and we had numbers of opium dens active in Victoria and Vancouver. And basically they said, well, we're concerned that these opium dens are going to seduce our white women, and we can't have that, and the only way we can protect them is to make this illegal. Very, very racist type of considerations. We did much the same with marijuana. We basically talked about reefer madness and all kinds of things which we know are false. So the very premise that we're using for illegal drugs is one of a paternalistic perspective that i.e. the government, I should tell you how you act and what you're going to do and what you should put in your body. Many people are saying, no, hold on a minute. I can make that decision myself. Give me good information. Give me the best evidence that you have, and then I will make the decision. And that's basically the public health approach. It's a much more libertarian approach than the paternal sort of ideas that went into making these drugs illegal in the first place.
So what do you think it is that continues, despite all this evidence, to prop up this prohibition approach, this idea that, you know, drugs need to be illegal because they're bad? And we don't seem to be able to bring in much common sense into this debate, I find, in the mainstream.
Well, you've really hit the nail on the head. I mean, I would love to sit down with our Attorney General Wally Opal and Gordon Campbell and the Minister of Health and anybody else and say, what we need to do is we need to develop evidence. Much of what I've said is what I and many others think, but we haven't actually been able to prove that because they will not let us do a good trial of legalization. They won't let us say, okay, let's take the province of British Columbia and let's try this public health framework for psychoactive drugs, and let's make sure that it works. Let's make sure, let's get the wrinkles out of it. But if they won't let us do that, then we're caught by people who are fearful of change only because of their fear. The evidence that we give them has not been effective. And the evidence comes from, if you increase the penalties, what we're likely to have happen is that we will increase the profits because we will make it more difficult. And we've known that for many, many years. So what we're looking for is an opportunity to try a public health framework for psychoactive drugs, and let's prove to you and to your satisfaction and to the satisfaction of your listeners that we're right, that we can do this, that this is similar to enough to tobacco and alcohol, that appropriate regulation will reduce the harms. It's not a panacea. It's not going to get it down to zero. The prohibitionists say, well, we're going to make no drugs, zero drug use. They have failed at that absolutely dismally. But they're not prepared to let us try to do better. And that's what I find personally, what I find so terribly frustrating about this whole debate.
I guess I'm curious as to what some of those sources of resistance are. I mean, I imagine one of them is the whole criminal justice system as an institution sort of defending its existence. Maybe you can talk a little bit more specifically about what some of those systems of power are that are resisting this type of change.
Okay. Well, I think there's probably at least three groups, and there may well be many more. And the first group are people whose view of the world, whose view of how society should be done is a very paternalistic, very morally based, very belief based view. They're the same people who think that it's, you know, that basically prohibiting things is perfectly fine. And I think that's those people's belief systems. I think they feel like what they're saying is based in their own belief system. That's fine. I'm not, you know, I don't really want to argue with that. I think they have as much of a right to their beliefs as I do for mine. The second group are people who see themselves as being directly employed by the system. And they are very afraid, I think, of two things. One, it's very, very difficult to say that what you've been doing is wrong. And I'm a physician, and physicians over the years, we've done some pretty bad things where we thought we were doing the right thing, but we found out that the evidence is that we weren't doing the right thing. Now, we've tried really hard to change. Change is not easy, and I think that these people, the justice system, the police, first of all, I'd say to the police, is, look, we're just changing the law. We still need you. We're not talking here now about you know, sort of saying that there'll be no more police forces or anything. We just want you to change your focus. We want you to change the way you do it. We are saying to prison guards, and we're saying to prisons, you're going to have a lot less people in there. And we're saying to hospitals, you're going to see a lot fewer people coming in with the complications of drugs. And if they're worried about the fact that this will mean they have nothing to do, I would reassure them and say, I don't think that's the truth. The third group is the one that really most disturbs me, because they're the ones that are making the profits. They're the ones that, very similar to what some tobacco companies and others were doing 30 years ago, saying, oh, there's no, this is the best way to do it. These people will have the same moral arguments as the first group, but these people will be making those arguments because they don't want to lose their profits. And these are the people who have access to large amounts of cash, and they can be extremely influential indirectly with both governments and with basically with law enforcement. And it's that group that I most sort of, I guess I would have to use the word despise, but that I can't identify, because there are people whose money is coming illegally. So they're the ones that I think are really supporting the system, and they're the ones that have the ear of government. And government needs to say, well, just a minute, let's get the evidence base here. Let's talk to our officials who are involved in public health. Let's listen to them and stop listening to this politically supported, heavily funded by the drug money group of people who are trying to keep the system the way it is now.
Well, thanks so much for joining us and helping us explore some of these ideas and giving us a bit of a picture of what drug legalization would look like.
Well, it's my pleasure. Thank you very much for asking us, and hopefully in a couple of years we'll look back at this and say, gee, weren't we silly at that time?
Hopefully.
Now we've done it and it works.
Well, thanks so much.
My pleasure.
We have been speaking with Dr. Richard Mathias. He's a professor of public health and a member of the Health Officers Council of BC. To find a copy of the Council's paper on the public health approach to dealing with drugs, you can check it out at the website of Keeping the Door Open, and their website is www.keepingthedooropen.com.